Okay, Hare Krishna, everybody. We are starting Krishna in Vrindavan. And we're live on Facebook, and we are live on Zoom, and we're live in person. So, Hare Bol. And so, as you all know, this is the month of Kartik, which is the month of Lord Damodar. And during this month, we try to focus on Krishna's very sweet pastimes, because the Damodar Leela is one of the sweetest of Krishna's pastimes, in which we see how Krishna is controlled by the love of his devotees. And the amazing thing about Mother Yashoda is that she's chasing after the Supreme Personality of Godhead with a stick to punish him. And she ties him up, which means that in order to do that, she can't have any conception that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Otherwise, she would just be like, oh, Lord, you can do whatever you want. I'm your humble servant. Mm-hmm. So that's the characteristic of the residents of Vrindavan, the Vrajavasis, is that they don't know that Krishna is God. They just see Krishna as their beloved child or their best friend or their lover or like that. So they have all these very intimate, sweet relationships and pastimes with Krishna. So because that mood is very much the mood of Kartik, then we're going to focus over the next 20, some whatever, the whole month of Kartik, however many days it is, on Krishna in Vrindavan. So the first, we're going to start with Krishna's being in Vrindavan, which basically starts from his birth. And usually we hear that Krishna was born in Mathura, or Mathura is the more correct pronunciation. We usually hear that Krishna is he was born in Mathura to Vasudeva and Devaki, and he appeared first in his four-armed, four-handed Vishnu form, and then he took his baby form. And yeah. So, and that did happen. So Krishna did appear. He is the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. He did take birth from the womb of Devaki and in the prison of Kamsa in Mathura. But simultaneously, and this is something that's lesser known, but we know this from the commentaries of different acharyas, like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He's very emphatic that Krishna is the son of Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj. And so the way he explains it is that Krishna, at the same exact time that Krishna appeared in Mathura from the womb of Devaki, he also appeared, he was also born to Yashoda in Vrindavan. It was like a simultaneous thing. So then when Vasudev carried Krishna over across the Yamuna over to Gokul, then he went to the house of Nanda Maharaj, and he went into the inner chambers there of the maternity room where Mother Yashoda had just given birth. And so what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says is that Mother Yashoda first gave birth to Krishna, that Krishna was actually born from Mother Yashoda's mind, because her heart, she's the eternal mother of Krishna. And so her heart, her mind is always absorbed in Krishna. So that Krishna within her mind was born, appeared. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He can be born any way he wants. So he doesn't have to, you know, come out the way that normal babies come out. He was born from her mind. And he was born first. And the evidence for that is that the girl child, the female child, Yogamaya, is called the younger sister of Krishna. So that means that Krishna is her older brother. He must have been born first. So Mother Yashoda gave birth to Krishna and then to Yogamaya. So Krishna and Yogamaya were fraternal twins, you could say, in one sense. So then when Vasudev carried Krishna over to Gokul, then it was midnight. Krishna was born at midnight. It was a little after midnight because he was already born, and everybody was sleeping. Of course, in the maternity room anyway, men weren't allowed. It was just some nurses and some midwives who were helping, Mother Yashoda, but because it was the middle of the night, they were all sleeping. And Vasudev just kind of snuck in, and he took the girl child, he took Yogamaya, and he left Krishna. And he didn't notice that there was another child there. It was dark, he was in a hurry, he was just told, he was instructed by Krishna, go there, take the girl, leave me, and go back. So he was just like, you know, focused on what he was doing. He went there, he saw the girl, and he didn't want to get caught. He needed to get back quick before Kamsa, the guards woke up, and Kamsa found out that all these things happened. So he quickly just put the Krishna there, took the Yogamaya, and went back. So then what happened was that because now you've got two Krishnas, they're lying in the bed in the maternity room with Mother Yashoda. So then because they're both Krishna, they just combined. So the Krishna that Vasudev brought immediately just merged with the Krishna born to Mother Yashoda. And so you have one Krishna with Mother Yashoda and Yogamaya there in Mathura with Vasudev Devaki. And then she, you know, comes and tries to kill her. That's another story. But we're talking about Krishna in Vrindavan. So then the next morning, the news comes out. Everybody wakes up and everybody, the announcement goes out that Mother Yashoda gave birth to a boy. Just one boy. Nobody knew what happened. Even Mother Yashoda didn't know what happened, because she felt she knew that she had given birth to one child, but because Krishna came from her mind, she didn't feel that. She didn't experience that. And she was very tired from the labor and the delivery and all that. So she just, after the baby was born, she went to sleep. When she woke up, she couldn't remember if she had given birth to a boy or a girl. So everybody was happy that Nanda and Yashoda had a boy. They had wanted a child for a long time. Finally, they got this beautiful, beautiful son. And it was time to celebrate. So in the Bhagavatam, there's this really beautiful description of all the ceremony, the birth ceremony of Krishna. So I'll read some of these verses, and then I'll elaborate on some of them as we go. So we are reading from Canto 10, Chapter 5, Text 1. Shukadeva Goswami is telling the story. Nanda Maharaj was naturally very magnanimous, and when Lord Krishna appeared as his son, he was overwhelmed by jubilation. Therefore, after bathing and purifying himself and dressing himself properly, he invited brahmanas who knew how to recite Vedic mantras. After having these qualified Brahmins recite auspicious Vedic hymns, he arranged to have the Vedic birth ceremony celebrated for his newborn child according to the rules and regulations, and he also arranged for the worship of the demigods and forefathers. So Nanda Maharaj is setting up to have a big festival. And so we know that Nanda Maharaj, he was the head of the cowherd community of Gokul. And that community was full of cowherd men and women, basically dairy farmers. They were all Vaishyas, farmers, and they all had lots of cows. And their business was in, milk, yogurt, butter, ghee, all these things.
What year was this?
This was just over 5,000 years ago.
Over five?
Yeah, long time ago. So when a child is born, then the custom was to give lots of charity because it's a celebration. Nanda Maharaj is happy and he just wants to give. You know, when you're happy, you want to give, and also you want to, you want to get blessings. You want everyone to bless the child. So by giving in charity, he was trying to just make everybody happy. He was trying to, Nanda Maharaj knew the art of getting the blessings of the Lord. And of course, he didn't know that his son, the very baby that he was trying to get the Lord's blessings for, was the Lord, is the Lord. So he's thinking, I'm going to please the Brahmanas. I'm going to make everybody happy. And then by pleasing all the Brahmins and Vaishnavas, then the Lord is going to be happy and the Lord's going to bless my son. So that was Nanda Maharaj's thinking in arranging this festival. So it says that he gave away 2 million cows in charity, and those cows were also decorated with, you know, silk cloths and jewels and gold. It's interesting how, like, Prabhupada comments that Nowadays, gold is scarce. You know, if somebody has a little gold necklace or a little gold earrings, that's like, wow, you know, solid gold. That's something that not everybody has. But the society at that time, even though they were villagers and they were, you know, farmers, but they had so much opulence that even the cows, what to speak of the people, even the cows were decorated with gold and silks and all these things. And he was just giving them away like that. So not only was he giving away the cows, but he was giving away so much gold. Each cow was like wearing, you know, pounds of gold. So that's how opulent they were. And they were performing all these purificatory ceremonies. The Brahmins were reciting Vedic hymns. They invited all kinds of people. So they had Brahmins who could recite Vedic hymns. They had historians who were reciting the Puranas, these histories. They had people talking about the histories of dynasties, of royal families. And then they had singers who were just playing all kinds of musical instruments and singing, and they had accompaniment. And so they just invited all kinds of, just to create an auspicious atmosphere. So it was this big festival with so many musical instruments, and the place was very decorated. So it says here that the residence of Nandamarsh was fully decorated with festoons and flags. The gates were covered in varieties of flower garlands and pieces of cloth and mango leaves. The courtyards, the gates near the roads, and everything within the rooms of the houses were swept and washed very clean. The cows, bulls, calves were smeared with mixture of turmeric and oil. And yeah, their heads were bedecked. So this is the cows and calves. Their heads were bedecked with peacock feathers. They were garlanded and covered with cloth and golden ornaments. And then, so that day, the cowherd men would generally, like, you know, get together all their cows and take them out to pasture. But because they had heard that, you know, Mother Yashoda had given birth to a son, and Nandamarsh was the head of the community, and he was going to be throwing this big party to celebrate the birth of his son, they were all like, we are not taking the cows to the pasture today. So they decorated the cows. They got themselves all dressed up. All the women got all, you know, super dressed up. And they went over to Nandamarsh's place for the party, basically. And see what happened there. So, yeah, not only did they go, but they went with gifts, because it's just like, you know, like a baby shower. You go and you bring gifts for the baby, you bring gifts for the family. And so what kind of gifts do you think the cowherd men were bringing?
Butter, milk.
Yeah, what they had, you know, they were bringing pots of milk, pots of butter, pots of ghee, paneer. They were bringing all kinds of dairy products, right? Because that's what they had, and that's what they had to give. So there's just tons. There were just like pots and pots and pots of, you know, just like countless pots of all these things, milk, yogurt, butter, ghee. And so they all brought those things to Nandamarsh's place. And then the gopis, they were really happy. They were overjoyed for Mother Yashoda on the birth of her son. And so they got decorated. And Shukadeva Goswami says, they decorated themselves with proper dresses, ornaments, black ointment for the eyes. He says their lotus-like faces were extraordinarily beautiful, being decorated with saffron and newly grown kumkum. The wives of the cowherd men hurried to the house of Mother Yashoda with presentations in their hands. So they also had things. Because of natural beauty, the wives had full hips, full breasts, which moved as they hurried along. So why do you think Shukadeva Goswami, who is... you know, he's a great renunciant. Why is he going to such description of these cowherd women? He's talking about, you know, he's giving some details about their dress, their faces, their breasts, their hips, and, you know, all that. Non-material. Yeah. True. What else? Casey?
Maybe trying to reflect, like, Krishna's love.
Yeah, that's also definitely there. Yeah. Anything else? Because just like when Krishna came from the spiritual, Krishna comes to the spiritual world, he comes with all of his associates. So all of these cowherd women, they're Krishna's eternal associates from the spiritual world, and they don't have material bodies. They have spiritual bodies, and they're all expansions of Krishna's own internal potency, or they're all expansions of Srimati Radharani originally. So Shukadev Goswami is describing them as a glorification of the Lord himself, and how his energies manifest so wonderfully, how his spiritual potencies, his internal potencies manifest in such attractive ways. So it's an appreciation of the Lord by appreciating the Lord's energies. Okay. Yeah, and he goes on talking about the gopis' jewelries and the necklaces on their necks, the bangles on their arms, the colors of their dresses, the flowers in their hair, which fell onto the street like showers, because they were rushing there. They were excited to go see the baby. And they were running there. The flowers were falling out of their hair. And they were singing. They were excited about all that. So then the custom at that time was that when a baby would be born, like I said, no men would go into the maternity room. So these women were especially happy because they were going to go. They were going to see the baby. Their husband, all the cowherd men, had to stay outside and just wait. But the women could actually go in. So they had prepared all these. Also, in addition to bringing all the, milk and yogurt and all those things, they brought some, different cosmetics and sort of antiseptics. They had essential oils mixed with turmeric, fresh turmeric juice, which is antiseptic, which helped with the healing process and just to anoint the baby for the protection of the child. So yeah, so they went in there and they offered their blessings to Krishna, which is sweet. Usually most people pray to God for blessings, but they're giving their blessings to Krishna. So it just shows again that the Vrajavasis are so exalted that their love for the Lord overwhelms any concept of his godliness, of his divinity. And they just see him as a little innocent, beautiful baby. So they go there and they say, Krishna, may you become the king of Braj and long maintain all of its inhabitants. Because Nandamaraj is the king of Braj. He's the king of the cowherd men. And they're thinking, okay, the son of the king of the cowherd men, he's going to be the new, he'll be the new king of the cowherd men. They're thinking of him like that. And then they're sprinkling him with all this, turmeric powder and oils and water and things and on Krishna. So then, meanwhile, outside, the music is playing, these bards are reciting, histories, and the Brahmins are reciting Vedic mantras. And it's described that not only is it that the people who came to Nandamaraj's place are doing that, but all over the universe. So in the heavenly planets, the demigods are playing musical instruments. They're also singing. And even in the hellish planets, people are playing musical instruments and singing. The whole universe is just in music. They're just in festival mode. And the demigods are showering down flowers and they're dancing. And it's resounding all over the universe. So when the women come out from seeing Krishna, they're like so ecstatic. And they've just brought, the turmeric powder and the oils and the purificatory water and all that they've sprinkled on Krishna. And then they brought whatever was left out and they start sprinkling it on everybody there. Just like when we offer, the aarti in the morning here, we offer water and they put it in a little sprinkler bottle and then go around and put a little bit on everybody's head. So they were going around and they're just like, but because they were so ecstatic, they were like, they weren't, doing it in a controlled way, like tick, tick, few drops on. They were just like taking it and just throwing it. They're just throwing it on everyone. So then the cowherd men, they were also, and there was this festive mood, it was just like this energy in the air of just like, everyone was jolly. And so remember all those pots of milk and butter and ghee and yogurt? So the cowherd men were like, okay, they were taking the pots of yogurt and getting handfuls and throwing it on the women. And then the ladies were grabbing milk and like throwing it on them. And then they were getting butter and smearing it on each other's faces. And it just ended up being a complete free for all. And the music was playing. And as this like, you know, yogurt and milk and butter fight was going on, then, you know, the musicians were getting more revved up, just like, you know, the kirtan in the morning, you know, the devotees start dancing, the vrnaga player starts playing more, and then this lead singer sees everybody's dancing, and then he starts singing louder, and it's like, they're all just kind of like fueling each other's transcendental, ecstatic fire. What's that? Yogurt's missing it. Yeah, we have to get some yogurt going. Mangalarti. Every day of Karthik. Who's going to clean that up afterwards, right? Nita. Yeah, so it's described that so much, and because all of them were dairy farmers and all of them brought so much milk, and you know, Nandan Raj alone had, you know, millions of cows, and there's just like, if you added all the cows up together, it was uncountable. It was like inconceivable number. So there was an unlimited supply of milk and yogurt and all these things. And it's described that there was so much milk on the ground in Nandaraja's courtyard that it created like a stream that like was flowing, and it flowed all the way down to the Yamuna River. And the Yamuna got turned milky, and it was like flowing like that. And so people, even like miles down the river, they were going down to the Yamuna to just fetch water, and they were drinking that water, and they were becoming ecstatic. And they didn't even know why. So that's the effect of Krishna consciousness, you know, that a person becomes happy in Krishna consciousness, and then they go on a Harinam, and that joy just overflows. And we go downtown with the Harinam, and then what happens? These people who are like standing in lines, you know, like trying to get into the clubs and stuff, they like see us and they get happy and they start dancing and singing, and then their friends see them and they're like, hey, and they jump in. So it's like the happiness, the ecstasy of Krishna consciousness is contagious, and it flows, you know, it flows from one soul to another. That's why the association of devotees is so important and so powerful and so uplifting, because their love for Krishna actually flows. It flows from their heart, and we can feel that. You know, it enlivens our own hearts, and we can go on and pass that on to others. So all this was going on, and in the middle of it, Nanda Maharaj, he's just completely, now at this point, because he was giving charity before, now it's just like, he's just totally like lost all sense of formality. And he's just like giving everybody whatever they want, you know, so whatever. The people who are saying prayers, he's giving them stuff. These people who are saying the histories, he's giving them. So everybody's just getting whatever they want. He's satisfying everybody's desires. And then because Mother Yashoda's in the maternity room, she's not going to come out, because that's the custom, is that when the baby's first born, so at least for 11 days, she just stays with the child, and she doesn't bring the child out. Some places they'll do that, like in Mayapur, even some devotee women, they'll stay in the house with the baby for sometimes like, what, 3 months? A long time. Yeah, they do that. So it's a thing. It's
not okay with the body, they couldn't see Krishna.
No, only the women. But everybody knew. Everybody was just, but just by seeing Nanda Maharaj was so happy that just seeing him, they were just like elated. Yeah, see, the benefits. So then it was the same thing when Lord Chaitanya was born, right? Like, you know, Sachimatri was just the wife of Advaitacharya went in, the wife of Srivastacharya went in, and the men stayed outside. So. Yeah, but so Mother Yashoda couldn't go and greet the guests. So then Nanda Maharaj invited Rohini to come and greet the guests. So she was taking all the female guests. So she got all dressed up. She was receiving everybody, just wandering through the crowd, you know, making sure that she, you know, gave everybody some attention and welcomed them, made them feel at home. So that was part of the culture of hospitality. And it says here that the home of Nanda Maharaj is eternally the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his transcendental qualities, and is therefore always naturally endowed with the opulence of all wealth. Yet beginning from Lord Krishna's appearance there, it became the place for the pastimes of the goddess of fortune. So wherever Krishna is, there's going to be prosperity. Everything is going to be there in opulence, because wherever there's Krishna, there's the goddess of fortune. And this verse also signifies that Srimati Radharani is going to appear very soon. So Krishna's eternal consort. Okay. So then after that, after the festival, Nanda Maharaj thinks, because he'd been hearing about, at that time Kamsa was the king of Mathura, and he had already imprisoned Vasudeva and Devaki and Ugrasen. He'd taking the old king out of his position and thrown him into jail, and he usurped the throne. And some of you may know that Kamsa, he was a demoniac person, and there was a prophecy that the eighth son of Vasudeva and Devaki, who was Krishna, would kill him. So he, of course, didn't want to be killed by Krishna. So he was doing everything he can to try to find Krishna and kill him. And that's the whole reason Vasudeva and Devaki were in prison, because his idea was, we'll just keep them here, and as soon as he's born, I'll just kill him. And that's why Vasudeva carried Krishna over to Gokul, to Vrindavan, to be safe there with Nanda and Yashoda. But Nanda Maharaj knew nothing about any of this. But he did know that Kamsa was doing all these atrocities, because when Kamsa heard that Krishna was born and he didn't know where he was, he sent out this edict that let all the babies that were born in the last 10 days in the whole district be killed. So all this baby killing was going on, and Nanda Maharaj was very much worried about his newborn baby, because he's like, oh no, they're killing babies. I don't want them to come here. So he thought, let me go to Mathura and just pay my taxes, because he was the head of the community. All the communities had to, gather up taxes and go pay them to the king. And he thought, let me just make sure that Kamsa has no reason to send his men to Vrindavan. So I'll do my responsibilities, so I'm not going to get any trouble. So he went there to pay his taxes, and he did that. And while he was there, then Vasudeva came to meet him, because Vasudeva was in complete anxiety. One, he knew that Kamsa was doing everything he could to try to find Krishna and kill him. And two, he wasn't sure whether Nanda Maharaj knew what had happened, because, he snuck in and he didn't know if anybody had seen him, because, nobody talked to him. Nobody said, hey, what are you doing? But somebody could have been, walking around and just kind of seen what happened and reported that to Nanda Maharaj, and, they could have found something out that, this person snuck into the maternity, this man snuck into the maternity room, and he went in with one baby and came out with another, and, it's like something going on there. So he was worried that Nanda Maharaj somehow found out, and that maybe he would be upset and there would be problems. So then Vasudeva went to talk to Nanda Maharaj in a very discreet way to try to find out what Nanda Maharaj knew. And so he said things like, he said, Vasudeva sat down very peacefully, having been received by Nanda, and inquired about his own two sons because of intense love for him. He said, My dear brother Nanda Maharaj, at an advanced age you had no son at all and were hopeless of having one. Therefore, now that you have a son, that's a sign of great fortune. It is also by good fortune that I'm seeing you. Having obtained this opportunity, I feel as if I have taken birth again. Even though one is present in this world, to meet with intimate friends and dear relatives in this material world is extremely difficult. So he's saying, now you have a son as a sign of great fortune. And he was saying that, he's specifically saying, now you have a son, because he was giving Nanda the opportunity to say, well, actually, I was supposed to have a daughter. How did it get to be a son? But because Nanda Maharaj didn't say anything, he's like, yeah, I got a son. Then he was like, okay, he doesn't know anything. So that gave Vasudev some confidence. And then, then he just inquires about the well-being. And also Balaram, because Rohini was also under Nandamaraj's care, and she's the wife of Vasudev. And Vasudev knew that Rohini had given birth to Balaram. So he's asking, he says, my son Baladev, being raised by you and your wife Yashoda Devi, considers you his father and mother. Is he living very peacefully in your home with his mother Rohini? So he's asking, he's inquiring about the welfare of Balaram. And so then Nandamaraj says, alas, he's talking to Vasudev, King Kamsa has killed so many of your children born of Devaki, and your one daughter, the youngest child of all, entered the heavenly planets. So here again, he's confirming that he doesn't know anything that happened, because he's saying that your daughter, Yogamaya, the one that was actually born of Yashoda, he's saying that your daughter has, you know, she wasn't actually killed by Kamsa, because when Kamsa tried to kill her, she just slipped out of his hands and went up in the sky and said, Kamsa, you rascal, the person that's going to kill you is already born. So, yeah. And then Nandamaraj gets a little philosophical. He says, every man is certainly controlled by destiny, which determines the results of one's fruitive activities. In other words, one has a son or daughter because of unseen destiny. And when the son or daughter is no longer present, this is also due to unseen destiny. Destiny is the ultimate controller of everyone. One who knows this is never bewildered. So, and Nandamaraj is trying to sort of comfort Vasudev, because Nandamaraj is happy because he's got a son, but Vasudev, all of their babies were killed and they're left without any child except Balaram, who is in Vrindavan with Rohini, and Vasudev hasn't even met his own son Balaram. So Vasudev, it's kind of sad for Vasudev, but he's very responsible, and he's just happy to know that Krishna is safe and that everything's going according to Krishna's own plan, that Balaram's also in good hands with Rohini and Nandamaraj. And but he knows that Kamsa is totally determined to find Krishna. So he says to Nandamaraj, my dear brother, since you've paid your taxes already and you've also seen me, don't hang around in Mathura too long. It's better you go straight back to Gokul, because there may be some disturbances there. He doesn't say why he thinks that. He doesn't give any indication of the nature of the disturbances, because he doesn't want Nandamaraj to get too worried. But he's just like, you better hurry home, because there could be some trouble, and you need to be there to protect Krishna and Balaram. So then they just got in their bullock carts and they went back to Gokul. That is chapter 5 of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's about Krishna's birth celebration and the meeting of Nandamaraj and Vasudev. Rohini, yes.
Balaram.
Yes.
So she was, so Balaram's father is
Vasudev.
And she's not with Nandamaraj?
Yeah, I mean, she's not with him, but she's, under his care, because Vasudev's in prison.
That's why.
So it's just to keep her safe, because Vasudev and Nandamaraj are very close friends. And in fact, they're related. Their father, they're basically stepbrothers or half brothers. They have the same father but different mothers, because Kshatriyas had many wives.
Yeah.
And so one of Shurasen's wives was a Vaishya, and she gave birth to Nandamaraj, who was a Vaishya, and another was a Kshatriya, who gave birth to Vasudev, who's a Kshatriya. So like that. So they're very closely related. They're also just very close friends. And so when Vasudev and Devaki got thrown into prison, then he said, Nanda, please take care of my wife Rohini. She's going to come and stay with you and Yashoda in Vrindavan until I come out of jail.
Right, you already said that. I like the Chinese.
Was that your question? Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, what happened with Balaram is that he was actually conceived in the womb of Devaki, but then by Yogamaya, he was transferred from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini. And Devaki just thought she had a miscarriage, but it was actually the Lord's own arrangement that he take birth from Rohini and be safe. Yeah. Evan?
What happened to the princess who was in the sky, but she's also in the Valapasa?
So what happened was that Yogamaya was not actually Subhadra, but she's Yogamaya. But when Vasudeva took her back to Mathura and gave her to Devaki, Devaki was holding her, and she was beautiful. She was like the sweetest little girl baby ever. And Devaki was just like really enamored with this little baby. And she thought, oh, it's such a shame that, you know, Kamsa's going to kill you, basically. Like, I wish that I could keep you. I wish that I could raise you as my daughter. And then when Kamsa got her and grabbed her by the leg and tried to smash her down on the floor, then she slipped out of town. She went into the sky and she manifested her form. At that time, she manifested Mahamaya, Durga Devi. And she told, you know, she told basically told Kamsa off. And then she just disappeared. She just disappeared into the sky. And they say that she, like, the understanding was that she went to the heavens, you know, she returned to the heavens. But because Devaki had the desire to have her as her daughter, so then later, Vasudeva and Devaki had another girl child who was Subhadra. And she's like an incarnation of Yogamaya. So it's the same personality in an expansion. It's expansion of Yogamaya. So it's a separate birth of the same person. How did Subhadra get to Vrindavan? Subhadra didn't live in Vrindavan. Rohini. Yeah, Rohini tells them. Subhadra hears them and she gets ecstatic by hearing them. But Rohini's narrating everything because she was there. She saw everything. Varangi?
Just a quick question.
Yeah.
Have you based all of your pastime today like just on this chapter? Do you like do additional readings?
No, it's mainly from this chapter 5. And then like some of the preliminary stuff, like some of the history I gave up before Krishna's birth came from preceding chapters. But it's all... Yeah, just Bhagavatam and the... Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comments on the Bhagavatam. He's the one who explains how, you know, Krishna simultaneously took birth from two mothers.
Yeah.
That's in Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur.
Okay,
Sarata Darshini. Yeah, it's right there. It's very clear. He's very emphatic about it.
Sarata Darshini.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's very satisfying. Victor?
So you're reading from
Bhagavatam? Yeah, it's called Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah, so this book has complete philosophy of Krishna consciousness from the beginning to end. It explains everything about the structure of the universe, the creation of the material worlds, the different incarnations of the Lord and all their pastimes, Krishna's own personal pastimes, the whole philosophy of Krishna consciousness.
Is it part of a series of books or anything?
Yeah, there are 18 volumes like this. This is one.
What are they called?
Srimad Bhagavatam.
The whole
Yeah, the whole thing is called Srimad Bhagavatam, and then there are different cantos. This is the 10th canto.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but it comes in the Vedic tradition. It's part of the Vedas. It's a commentary on a commentary of the essence of the Vedas. It's a commentary on the essence of the Vedas by the author.
The Vedas
has no author. It comes directly from Krishna, but then it's compiled by an incarnation of Krishna called Vyasadeva, and then Vyasadeva, after compiling the Vedas, then he writes a he gets the essence of the Vedas and he puts them in a very brief form. It's called Vedanta Sutra. It's very philosophical. And then after that, he writes a commentary on Vedanta Sutra, which is Srimad Bhagavatam, which is what we're reading.
Okay. So the story that you were just telling, the evil king wants to kill
Kamsa. Yeah, wants to kill Krishna.
It sounds like the Herod story from the Bible.
It's similar, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's lots of parallels. You know, like we have also like the great flood and how Matsya comes and saves the Vedas and saves the different, you know, living entities. It's very similar to Noah's Ark and Noah.
That's all
in the Bhagavatam. Yeah. So yeah, it's interesting how there are all these parallels between different traditions.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Immaculate Conception. Yeah, so even when Krishna was born, it wasn't, you know, through sexual intercourse that he was conceived. It was just that, you know, he was transferred from the mind of, from the heart and mind of Vasudeva into the mind of Devaki, and then appeared like that. Yeah, same thing. That's what we're saying. Yeah, there's lots of parallels between. Yeah.
How do you remember all the names? Remember
y'all's names. they're kind of long, and you just get used to them. Like after a while of hearing these stories, they become like very familiar personalities.
Okay.
They're kind of like your own family. Yeah. All right. Any last thing? We got a couple minutes.
Why do you have too many cows?
Oh. I mean. Somebody asked a question one time because the geographical location of Vrindavan is like 64 miles in diameter? 84 miles in diameter. So how did you even fit all those cows in that space? You know, cows need a lot of space. So the thing is that the holy dam, Vrindavan Dham, is not a material place. It's not limited by, you know, just normal geography the way most places are. It can expand according to the desire of the Lord. It can contract according to the desire of the Lord to accommodate all those cows. So sometimes it expands and then, you know, for cows to wander around. And other times, like, so let's say Krishna wants to walk from Ramanreti to Nandagram or Yabat. Then it contracts, and then the distance becomes, yeah, it's like a lotus that, you know, the petals expand and then it contracts at night.
So it's like you're in Yoga Maya, like that and sort of holding seated and experience that, but on the outside it just appears to be like material.
Yeah. There's a covering, there's a Maya covering of Vrindavan that when we go there we just kind of see it for, we just see the covering. You know, we see dirty streets and, you know, monkeys jumping around and rickshawalas trying to cheat you and stuff. But actually, when pure devotees go to Vrindavan, they see it very differently. You can read those descriptions of what Vrindavan actually looks like. And there's a book called Ananda Vrindavan Champu by Kavi Karnapur, where he very poetically, very beautifully describes the true nature of Vrindavan Dham. Ananya Bhakti.
Why was Krishna born like
he wasn't, he also came from her mind, that's what it says. She gave birth, she experienced giving birth to one child, that was the Yogamaya. But Krishna was born from her mind. He just kind of appeared out of her thoughts of him. Paula?
Can you explain?
Yeah. But first of all, Krishna actually, he appears to take birth, but he's called Aja. He's unborn, but he just appears to appear. He's actually, in one sense, he's always there because he's all pervasive. So he can manifest from anywhere at any time through any means. And he does that according to his own will. So Yogamaya is an internal potency of the Lord, which acts to facilitate Krishna's pastimes. So it's actually Yogamaya. Yogamaya is very significant, very influential in Vrindavan because she's the one who covers over everybody's knowledge of Krishna's divinity so that they can continue to see him as just, you know, their little, Mother Yashoda just sees him as her little boy that she needs to protect. And we're going to be hearing all about that through these pastimes. So Yogamaya is going to come up again and again. So by the end of Krishna's Vrindavan Leela, you're going to have a good grip on Yogamaya and how she works in Krishna's pastimes. Okay, we better wrap it up because we are out of time. So we'll see you tomorrow, Thursday, same time, same place for the killing of Putana. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.